We're starting again. I said this month we're focusing on Sila, which is also called virtue, ethics, morality. You can kind of choose whichever term resonates with you. Sila is the second of the 10 paramis, or 10 perfections, they're also called. The paramis have been described by different teachers in different ways. Beautiful qualities of heart, ethical sensitivity, moral beauty, and Norman Fisher says, basic human goodness. As humans, we all have access to the paramis, and I'm going to share my screen. Let's see here. Hope this works. Aha. So this one, share. Can you see two people? Okay. So as I was starting to think about Sila this month, I opened my book called Offerings, and some of you may have it, and I saw this picture, and I said, that's Sila. That's beautiful qualities of heart. That's ethical sensitivity, moral beauty, and just basic human goodness that we all have access to. I'm also going to read the poem that I discovered yesterday in the new book that I think is a really good representation of Sila. We'll recognize some of us the poet, because she was in the first volume too. Her name is Rosemary Wetola Tromer, and the title of the poem is Why I Smile at Strangers. And there's a quote before the poem by Blaise Pascal. In difficult times, carry something beautiful in your heart. And the poem begins, and so today I walk the streets with vermilion maple leaves inside me and the deep purple of late blooming larkspur and the lilting praise of meadowlark. I carry with me thin creeks with clear water, and the three-quarters moon, and the spice-warm scent of nasturtiums, and honey in the sunlight, and words from Neruda, and slow melodies by Erik Satie. It is easy sometimes to believe that everything is wrong, that people are cruel, and the world destroyed, and the end of it all imminent. But there is yet goodness beyond imagining. The creamy white flesh of ripe pears, and the velvety purr of a cat in my lap, and the white smear of Milky Way. I carry these things in my heart, more certain than ever that one way to counteract evil is to ceaselessly honor what's good and share it. Share it until we break the choke hold of fear, and at least for a few linked moments, we believe completely in beauty. Growing beauty. Yes, beauty. So, I'll leave the picture there for a few minutes. The cultivation of the paramis is ongoing. It's the work of a lifetime, and it involves four processes, which I've talked about before this month, last month: attention, action, reflection, and meditation, and not necessarily in that order. To practice with Sila or any of the paramis, we have to attend to our inner mental experience and our actions in the world, too. Our attention to these experiences needs to be fearless and unbiased. Ajahn Sucitto refers to the need for heedfulness, which is mentioned often in the suttas, and sometimes pretty emphatically. Here's a quote from the Dhammapada. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Heedlessness is the path to death. To the heedful do not die. The heedless are already dead. Ajahn Sucitto describes heedfulness in a more accessible way, I think. He says it's the opening of the mind in full attention and a dropping of habitual, careless, or compulsive tendencies. It's the preparation for seeding parami. When your mind is opened out of its preoccupation, you have a chance to reflect on what it's doing and bring up a relevant intention, such as patience, kindness, and so on. Sometimes when I think back on my actions, the unskillful ones, I say to myself, what was I thinking? And the truth is, I wasn't thinking or reflecting much. I was acting carelessly from habit or impulse. Being heedful means we investigate the more subtle layers of our experience. For example, we might be polite, but not kind. We see that for what it is. Having the intention not to harm is essential for practicing with sila. We pay attention to our inner intention as well as our outward action. And we need to be aware of inner qualities that might be ultimately harmful, like fixed views, judging, righteousness, conceit, and prejudice. These are signs that we are have become attached to our way of being good. And religious wars are often justified by this kind of thinking. I'm going to close this now. We've been talking a lot about the five Buddhist precepts this month, which are some pretty straightforward guidelines for focusing our attention on not causing harm and acting. And I'm going to share my screen again so I just can review these precepts for you. Let's see here, screen share. Sorry about this. Okay, there we are. Sorry, let's see if I can get this. Okay, screen share. Parami. There we go, precepts. Okay. So, oops, that's the paramis. Can you see the precepts or the paramis? Precepts? Okay, all right. Good. So those are the precepts, and they are, as you can see, let's see if I can see them. I can't see them. Okay. Well, you can read them. Everybody see the precepts? Okay. And they start with, I undertake the training to refrain from, and then you have five precepts. So it's important to notice that, there it is. Okay, sorry. The practice is to reflect on the intention of non-harming. I mean, that's the bottom line under each precept. So the precepts are specific, but we take into consideration their intention, which is non-harming and the well-being of ourself and our community. So it's not a thou shalt kind of list of rules. It's something that we have a relationship with. And so we need to remember the intention for them as we have a relationship with them, and as we reflect on how we're going to act with regard to them. For example, I have some wasps this is, t- let's take the first precept, thou shalt not, you know, thou shalt not refrain, undertake the training to refrain from harming, killing living beings. Well, I have wasps, really bad group of wasps right over my front porch. So, you know, I don't like insecticide. I definitely don't want to kill spiders. And I try not to harm. I used to have an exterminating service because I had rats in my garage. But then I read that they, the Cooper's hawks and other raptors, you know, feed on the rats, and then they're killed. So I just thought I'll live with the rats. Same thing with the ants. But I did hire someone to get rid of the wasp nests and, you know, cover up the spot. So we have to practice with it, and it's not, there are gray areas. You know, it's not a black and white thing. And I remember reading about IMS, the Insight Meditation Center in Barrie, when they were first in their big building, and they had a rat infestation, and they had, you know, they called the board meeting to decide what are they going to do about this. And I don't remember what the conclusion was, but I do remember that it was a big deal to decide how to handle the rats. And I remember a talk, I call it Rodney Smith, our founder. It was his Eat the Meat talk, and he was talking about the precepts, and he said, you know, if you're in somewhere and someone has invited you in, and they have a, you know, this feast for you, and they're so happy to offer it to you, he said, eat the meat. And I always remember that. So it's just a situation that we do have to keep. You know, this is an ongoing practice, and we have to keep in each context rethinking it and reestablishing our relationship to how are we going to act, what's the most appropriate way to act. The other thing I wanted to say, which goes in the other direction, is many people, you know, like as myself, didn't even think about getting rid of ants, you know, just killing them left and right. They're just tiny things. And then I think about it. I mean, it's hard if you have them in your kitchen, you know, getting into everything. But I think about, you know, and try to avoid as much as possible killing a lot of them in one fell swoop. And then I think of the Native Americans, and, you know, we do have a food chain. Nature has a food chain. But the Native Americans had a relationship with their food. And so they honored it. They thanked it. So to me, that's kind of a model of this particular precept. And it just shows how important it is that not to be black and white, that isn't what the Buddha taught. So the precepts, continuing with the precepts. I decided, Tim had some, our teacher on Monday night, Tim assigned Sila homework, and he asked us to pick a precept and take a personal journey with it. And I chose, I will undertake the training to refrain from false and harmful speech. On the surface, I think I do pretty well with this precept. I work hard not to gossip. I work hard at listening and not interrupting and not lying. But when I pay close attention, there was a reason I chose that precept. It just kind of came up. You know, you need to work on that precept. So I was started to pay closer attention, and I noticed that sometimes I exaggerate. You know, I round up. I say, oh, I walked 4 miles when I really walked 3.5 miles. Or when I want an excuse for not getting together, With someone, I might want to make something up as to why I'm busy and I can't get together. And sometimes I still do it because I just, you know, I really can't do the thing that I was invited to do. And I don't want to hurt the person's feelings, but I really think about it. I really think, is there, you know, I don't want to lie. And other times I just say, well, I'm going because I can't lie. So it's something I'm having a relationship with right now. And it's something I think I need to work on. I know the Buddha, it was said, I believe, that he never told a lie. And that is pretty admirable. The speech issue that stands out for me that seems to be my problem is that I find most harmful is not telling the truth by omission, not saying anything. And so I don't want to admit that I have any problem at all with honesty. That is really hard to admit to, but it's unbiased attention. You know, I've got to call it like it is. And so I'm asking myself, well, when do I do this? And I see that when I do this, I feel vulnerable sometimes, and I want to hide my vulnerability. So I just don't talk about it. And I don't like conflict, so sometimes I won't say what's bothering me because I don't want the conflict. And I don't like criticism. So I won't offer up something that I think I might be criticized for. And then I was thinking, this is part of my reflection, so how is this harmful? And I thought, well, first of all, it's harmful to me because it diminishes my integrity. If I want to avoid criticism or avoid feeling vulnerable, it shows me that I'm ashamed of parts of me. And immediately when I thought about that, I thought about a poem I like a lot, and it's was translated by Jane Hirschfield. It was written by a Japanese poet in the 10th, 11th century. Some of you may know it. It's called Watching the Moon. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary, mid-sky, I knew myself completely, no part left out. And that's what I want. No part left out. So not telling the whole truth by omission, saying nothing, is harmful to other people too, especially people I'm close to, family and friends. It keeps them in the dark about parts of me, and it keeps a space between us. So my aspiration in practicing with this parami is to cultivate being more direct and forthright in speech. And I realized that I also want to listen better, which means I want to be more generous with my attention to what others are saying, not leaving any parts of me out when I am speaking and when others are speaking too. I want to be fully present in the conversation. So I started to see it as a kind of generosity. I was looking at some of Norman Fisher's suggestions for Sila, and he said, practice telling people what you appreciate about them. And I thought, yeah, you know, I can appreciate a lot about different people I know, or even people, you know, I meet in the store or whatever, but I don't, often I just leave that out. I don't say it. So I decided that, I had a thought, and the thought was that I would, I put money in my pocket, cash, so that I can offer it to people on the street. And I thought, well, I'll just put appreciation in my other pocket. And I'll just think about, in my daily life, is there an opportunity to offer appreciation? And I was out walking. I'm pretty much of an introvert in a lot of ways, and so when I go out walking, I often just am in my own world, and I don't always smile and say hello to people. But as it is often, you have friends who are the opposite. And so I have friends, and every time I'm with them, they're saying hi and what's that and da 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 and making comments. And every time I see that, I think, so part of me says, oh, are they bothering these other people? But most of the time I see these people are very happy to have someone notice them and smile and say hi and ask questions. So recently I was walking with some people who are pretty extroverted, and they were doing this, left and right. And everybody was really happy to talk, stop and talk. And I thought about that, and I thought about my, aspiration to be more generous, more connecting with people. And the other day, I was walking, actually in the same spot I'd walked with these other two people a week earlier, and there was a couple in front of me, and they were walking along, and then someone came up to them on a bicycle and stopped and held out something in her hand. And they started talking. I couldn't quite hear what they were saying, but I saw this woman had a starfish in her hand. And this was up on the street, and you had to go down steps and around to go get to the water. So she was kind of questioning how there's this poor starfish here up on the street. And one of them said, oh, probably a seagull dropped it. And they looked at the starfish, and then this couple said, would you like us to take it down to the water? Oh, yes, would you take it down to the water? So the couple took the starfish from the woman on the bike, and I thought, isn't that, that's goodness. And so instead of being quiet like I normally would, I said something. I don't remember what it was, but I smiled and said something like, good for you, or something like that, and they smiled, and they were, I could feel it was a good exchange, and I felt good. I felt, that was kind of appreciation that people do that, that that's part of our human nature, in action. Yeah. So that is kind of my ongoing practice right now, to work on that precept. And I think some of you probably are picking one and working on a precept also. And all the teachers, say that it's really a great opportunity for us to develop our goodness. And you just can pick one particularly, your heart says this is a good one for you. The other thing I wanted to say was that our default behavior settings often have served us well in the past. So usually, if we're picking a precept, it's something that, we haven't been that good at. There's something probably that has worked for us in not following that precept. So it can take a lot of resolve to change these patterns. And so don't give up. Patience is coming up, another precept. We really need patience and resolve, which is another precept. They kind of work together. Okay. Here I go. And ultimately, developing. So, I just want to say one thing that I think the precepts, Ajahn Suchito said that one of the most important things about the precepts and sila is what it takes. Well, actually, said it about the precepts, what it takes to cultivate the precepts. It takes a lot. And Carrie said, when we work with the precepts, we're working with our conditioning, not our original sin. We're working with our conditioning. So ultimately, developing sila asks us to move away from protecting the ego self to opening up to our true self and offering safety to our true self and all beings. We're all in this together. So to close, I'm going to talk about meditation, which is a really important support in developing the precepts and sila. And meditation helps us with the wisdom needed to grow our virtue and trust in it. It helps us see clearly through delusions of shame and guilt, and it helps us forgive ourselves and others. It helps us pause and get in touch with our body, mind, and heart, which helps us take the next appropriate action. The action that's appropriate in the moment. Life can be very complex, and what is wise in one situation might not be so in another. We need to keep checking in, and we need to be alert to fixed views. Shame and guilt can be crippling, and these are fixed views. In meditation, we get in touch with our body sensations, feelings, and emotions that might show us that we are identifying with our actions, and then we feel guilty because we think we are our actions, and if we did a bad action, we're bad. We can step back in meditation and add some space to our perception of the situation by using the word unskillful instead of bad or wrong or mistake. It was just unskillful. Norman Fisher talks about regret and repentance as opposed to guilt and shame. These are aspects of acknowledging and moving on. We feel the pain of causing harm, which helps us make the commitment not to make the same mistake again, and to go on to the next choice, wiser than before. Self-blame and self-punishment are just as unskillful as sending the blame. Sorry, I have to turn that off. They're just as unskillful as sending the blame and desire to punish out into the world. So practicing meditation during sittings as well as during walking can encourage a general inclining of our mind towards wishing ourselves and others well, and seeing others as wanting to be happy, just as we want to be happy. And when we practice with metta, we are inclining the mind toward not requiring loving feelings to arise at our command. So we just practice metta. May you be happy. May you be well. May you be at peace. We don't have to feel it. We're just inclining the mind in that direction. And it can help us be kinder in the world, kinder to ourselves and kinder to others. We can also practice forgiveness meditation. And Eric Kolvik is a person from Albuquerque Insight Meditation, created some phrases for forgiveness meditation. So we can stay away from guilt and shame. He has a guided meditation on Dharma Seed website, and I'll post the link to this on the Sunday Sit resource page. He's created phrases for self-forgiveness, for forgiving others, and for asking for forgiveness from others. Just as with metta meditation practice, we incline the mind toward forgiveness. We don't demand it of ourselves. We don't even have to try to forgive, Norman says. Just be present, he says. And we start with minor things, not big acts of harming. Offer forgiveness, Eric Kolvik says, as far as you are able. And here's an example of the phrases for forgiving others that he created. So these are, just as I allow myself to be imperfect, so I allow you to be imperfect. I allow you to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive you. And if I cannot forgive you now, may I forgive you sometime in the future. So we can see that both loving kindness and forgiveness are gentle and are patient. But they're helpful. They incline our mind in a wholesome direction. So it looks like I need to close because we're coming to the, I'm over 11 o'clock. So I'll just say in conclusion that sila is, the world needs sila. The world needs our Sila. And each kindness matters. We can adopt one precept at a time and train with attention and reflection and meditation and action to cultivate the wholesome and refrain from the harmful. And when we falter, we can simply return and begin again. And for the closing poem, I have this one back on Patreon. Okay, so just a moment to let things settle and reflect on Sila. This is called A Voice That Calms by Daniel Ledinsky. And it's after a poem by Rumi. A voice that calms, movements that calm, eyes that quiet, dreams that also do the same, and enliven too. Be a precious donor of peace and hope. Give love to all you meet, for so many in this world are being torn apart. So we come to the end of the talk, and thank you for being here and listening. And now we can, I'll move you into breakout groups. Okay, it looks like we're all back. So if you'd like, this is a time when you could share out if you'd like. We have a few minutes, but we want to stop on time. So
hey, Lauren, is this okay time to announce that you were going to keep the Zoom open for after 11:30?
Yeah.
Because at least in our group, we had a lot to talk about, and maybe others feel similarly. So if you're able to stay, we're going to keep the Zoom room open so we can.
Until 12, yeah. So you can,
just wanted to say that.
And yeah, thank you. I had it on my list first, but you're right. We probably should announce it before session. Yeah, yeah. So are any of you practicing with a precept or have any feelings about forgiveness? Just to throw it out there.
I think for me, the one on harmful speech is the one that I want to practice with on a regular basis, and it keeps coming to mind. This week, I had to hold some little fourth graders to account for their speech. And I knew that I was initially just really tense, and because I felt like I was being reactive, but it had been building up. And it's like, all right, say what you need to say. Say it kindly. Say it firmly. And it pretty much did its job, I think. And now I'll be with them again on Monday, and I have to remember how to repair that, you know, how to make sure that that relationship is good, and yet still hold that as important.
Yeah, and just the way you describe the situation, it just shows how much care we have to take, you know, to actually do the best we can. So thank you for sharing that. We have a another minute or two if anybody wants to. Rosie,
did you want to share? I'm just thinking how a teacher's effect on students or children is so significant. I think that's so important to remember.
Yeah. Yes.
Just underline that.
Yeah. Thank you, Rosie.
Around speech.
Yes.
We just started a conversation, which I hope we will continue in from my group, about we're not always peaceful and quiet and calm because we need to stand up for things that we believe in and that are needed. And so I'm looking forward to an ongoing conversation about that. I don't think the Dharma is saying to just be passive and sweet all the time. We can be strong and do no harm. Just like Sue was saying, she was being strong with those fourth graders. Mm-hmm. And firm and setting boundaries and saying what's right. And there's a lot going on inside, but we can still be out there and be strong advocates. That's maybe more just my personal view, but I don't think the Buddha was saying just, roll over. I don't think ever just roll over, because we're also, the precepts are saying, when you live an ethical life, you're also modeling for others that there's a way of being strong and soft and do no harm and caring and forgiving and all of that. Anyway, I went a little bit on my soapbox, sorry.
Well, I think it's really true, because people who are harmful need to know that it's not okay. So things that are going on harmfully, and they might, they might not like it, but Julie, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up, Suze, because this is something that I've been struggling with for a long time. And honestly, I still don't know what's right. But I'll start with just a little story about something that happened the other day, because I volunteer for... I offered to volunteer for Sims to do the spreadsheet for the potluck, and I have been, I have been a vegan for 20 years, and I spent 15 years of my life sort of literally researching and publishing the impact of our food choices, down the line that people don't normally think about. And yet I know firsthand, trust me, that it's really easy to alienate people, because everybody believes, look, it's me, it's my body, I have a right to do what I want to do. I went and visited a Buddhist abbey a couple years ago, and they... we're all about the dairy, and, I know that the dairy causes more harm than the meat. I have all this information, and yet I don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable. So I thought, well, maybe in this spreadsheet I can just say, please consider bringing plant-based. And of course I got pushback. Because, we don't want to upset anybody. We don't want people to feel restricted. So where do you draw the line? I don't think most people have very much information about the harm that is caused, not just by food, but by all of our choices as consumers. And yet that's because most people don't want to know. And frankly, I don't want to be disliked. I don't want people to say, I don't want to be near Julie, but I have this side of me, so I have to keep it, you know, suppressed. So if anybody has any feedback on that, I would appreciate it. But it's very, very hard, and you wonder why there's all these angry vegans in the world. It's just a lot of, it's a lot of stuff to, you can either put out there what you feel and not have very many friends, or you can hold it all inside. So it's a very difficult line to cross. And I,
Julie, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you if you want to stay later, because I'm looking at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And sure. It's 11:28, and I said we would close
on. Sorry about that.
I'm really sorry.